Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Big wheel keep on turning, proud Terry keep on burning, rolling, rolling, rolling in some Richies. Spin the wheel and you could win $1.5 million in cash every Friday and Saturday in September and October. Every hour, four winners will be drawn to spin big in my $1.5 million wheel of Richies. The big wheels keep on turning, only at the Tachi Palace Casino Resort.
Fox Sports Updates brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, and new dinner specials on Thursday through Saturday. And check out the great new golf shop.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Dan Beyer.
Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa will practice this week as he tries to return from a concussion in week two. Tua will still have to pass concussion protocol to be active for their week eight game against Arizona. The Browns confirmed quarterback Deshaun Watson will miss the rest of the season because of a ruptured Achilles tendon suffered in yesterday's loss to the Bengals. Raiders quarterback Aiden O'Connell headed for IR after suffering a fractured thumb in their loss to the Rams on Sunday. Week seven ends tonight with a doubleheader. Ravens and Buccaneers, 8:15 Eastern time. Vita Vea expected to go for Tampa Bay, while the Chargers and Cardinals play in Arizona, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Saints head coach Dennis Allen said that quarterback Spencer Rattler will start their Week 8 matchup against the Chargers, while Giants head coach Brian Daboll says they are sticking with Daniel Jones as their starting quarterback moving forward. Yankees manager Aaron Boone named Gerrit Cole as the team's starting pitcher for Friday's game one of the World Series.
Fox Sports update on KPRL. Brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, and new daily specials. And check out the great new golf shop. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
Ag Information Network, this is your agribusiness update. As the number of California dairy farm outbreaks of H5N1 bird flu grows, industry experts remain unclear just how the disease may affect the nation's milk supply or pricing. As of October 9th, California had reported 93 bird flu outbreaks in dairy herds, nearly doubling in a week's time. Authorities insist H5N1 poses little threat to humans and that it's safe to drink milk that's been pasteurized. The Union of Concerned Scientists recently released a report analyzing the influence of lobbying on food and agriculture systems. The report finds agribusinesses, industry associations, and other interested groups have spent more than $500 million to influence legislation, including the twice-expired Farm Bill from 2019 to 2023. UCS Deputy Director Karen Stillerman emphasized the responsibility of legislators to uphold the needs of small to mid-sized farms, marginalized farmers, food workers, and consumers. And a federal judge rejected a petition from environmental activists for more strict regulation of large livestock operations. The Ninth Circuit Court lawsuit filed by Food and Water Watch challenged the EPA's decision last year to deny a petition to require all farmers to obtain permits to operate their CAFOs unless they could prove they're not a source of pollution. Activists argued livestock operations are releasing pollution into waterways in violation of the Clean Water Act.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov. Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Pass Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Pass Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are mixed in afternoon trading. The Dow's losing ground, but the Nasdaq is edging higher, boosted by tech, as investors get in gear for a busy week of earnings reports. Shares of Apple are up slightly and on track for a second straight record close. And the youngest son of late Playboy founder Hugh Hefner wants to buy back his father's storied empire. Cooper Hefner submitting an offer with a group of investors to buy the Playboy brand from the Playboy Group for $100 million, according to the Wall Street Journal. Wicked is slated to hit theaters on November 22nd, and Starbucks is getting into the action. The coffee giant will be partnering with Universal Pictures to celebrate the movie's release with two new beverages and several new cups. Starbucks unveiling the drinks tomorrow. Then on November the 7th, Starbucks will offer Wicked-inspired tumblers and cold cups in select stores. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, Donald Trump Jr. here. I never thought I'd see price fixing as a campaign promise. What's next? Is your 401k or IRA on the left's to-do list? This is why you need to act now and protect your nest egg. I believe gold is the answer. To find out more, get a free info kit from Birch Gold by texting the word SHELTER to the number 989898. Act now to secure your financial future. Text SHELTER to the number 989898 for your free info kit from Birch Gold.
Paid for by Birch Gold Group.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
For some time now, a lot of us have been asking, why can't little Willie read or do arithmetic? And the answer is, he isn't being taught to do that. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
The story is told of the new young schoolmaster telling the old-timer about progressive education. He was enthusiastic about how the children were allowed to express themselves, play games, draw pictures, visit with each other, etc. The old boy heard him out and then said, "We had that when I was in school." The young teacher said, "You did?" And he said, "Yep, we called it recess." A few weeks ago, a national magazine carried a one-page story by a lovely young lady, 24 years of age. She titled her story, "Confessions of a Misspent Youth," but don't let that title fool you. She was in no way a juvenile delinquent. She is instead a victim of some of the modern ideas in education that have been around for a couple of decades or so. Her parents were of that era when permissive education seemed to be the wave of the future. At age 4, in 1956, she was enrolled in a small private school which she describes as a school without pain. It specialized in freedom, the freedom not to learn. The idea was to cultivate the innate creativity each child was believed to have. According to this graduate of the educational sandbox, they had different hours for each subject, but they were free to dismiss anything that bored them. School policy forbade them from being bored, miserable, or made to compete with each other. In studying history by recreating its least important elements, in early American history they made teepees, pounded corn, and ate buffalo meat. Another year there were maids and knights in armor and drank orange juice from tinfoil goblets. As she says, that was the Middle Ages, but they never found out what the Middle Ages were. There were other examples. Copying hieroglyphics on brown wrapping paper without ever knowing what the hieroglyphics stood for. They spent a lot of time being creative because they were told that was the way to be happy. At age 10, they were functionally illiterate. Reading hadn't begun until third grade. I have a set of the old McGuffey readers, back when education was old hat. The first volume is for kindergarten. Sadly, this young lady says that upon graduation, all the happy young children fell down the hill. No matter what high school they went to, they were the underachievers, more handicapped than any underprivileged children. One of her fellow students killed himself after flunking out of the worst high school in New York at age 20. Others have put in time at various mental hospitals. Her own mother was advised to give her psychological tests to find out why she was blocking out information. She wasn't blocking it out. She didn't have any information to begin with. Rejected by all four-year colleges, she finally got a degree by way of a start in junior college. She rejoices that her 8-year-old younger brother was yanked out of the same progressive school when her mother finally saw the light and didn't want him to be like her. Her poignant closing line should be over the door of every teacher's college in America. Quote, "And now I've come to see that the real job of school is to entice the student into the web of knowledge, and then, if he's not enticed, to drag him in. I wish I had been." This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
This is Dakota Livesay chronicling another true story taken from the 1800s, a time known to all as the Old West. Jacob Waltz died on October 25, 1891, and took to his grave the answer to a question that thousands of people have spent their lives searching for. The story, but unfortunately not the answer, is coming right up.
Greetings everyone, Jim with Roosters Firearms here, bringing you some great specials. With fall in the air, Roosters Firearms designates this month of October as Glocktoberfest. So come on in, pick out a new Glock handgun, and take 10% off the price. Sorry, this deal does not apply to the Glock Law Enforcement Blue Label Program. Also, for all of you who've heard my last radio ad, I had home defense shotguns on sale for $199, and we sold out. Great news, we're restocking them now for the same price. And the 1,000 rounds of 9mm brass-cased range ammo is still on sale for $309.99. This ammo was made by the largest ammo manufacturer in the Czech Republic. It is factory fresh with clean burning powder and fully reloadable. We also sell it on the 50-round boxes, but the 1,000-round case is the smoking deal.
Hi, this is Terry. So Jim used up all of our commercial radio time, so all I get to say is I'm looking forward to seeing you at 98 South Main Street in Templeton.
When Jacob Waltz died on October 25, 1891, he became either the world's greatest prankster or the world's greatest secret keeper. Although his last name was spelled a number of different ways, we simply know him as the Dutchman, the man who discovered the lost Dutchman's mine in the Superstition Mountains just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. Tales of the existence of treasures in the Superstition Mountains go back to when Mexico owned the area. Back then, there were stories of others bringing out gold and many people disappearing, supposedly killed by Apaches, who were protecting a sacred area. A variety of stories were told about how the Dutchman found the gold mine, and each of them involves an Apache taking him to the area. Supposedly, Jacob Waltz went back into the mine on several occasions during his lifetime, each time being careful to cover his tracks. Although the Dutchman lived a very modest life, any time he needed money, he seemed to be able to come up with tin cans full of gold nuggets. Records show that he cashed in at least $250,000. To this day, there are people who spend their life searching for the lost Dutchman's mine. Even in modern times, people who go into the superstitions disappear. And if their bodies are found, they're often without a head. The Superstition Mountains, where the Lost Dutchman Mine is located, is right now next to freeways and housing developments. Yet it remains one of the Old West's most tantalizing mysteries. You've just heard another story from Old West Radio. I'm Dakota Livesay.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Well, if there's one thing we know, it's that life can get pretty busy. Throw you off your intended schedule. Well, not this week, though, because this week it's all about you earning entries to win thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including a $100,000 cash grand prize at Chumash Casino Resort. Ooh-hoo. Drawings start at 2 p.m. this Sunday. 75 winners throughout the day. Hey, welcome to freedom. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Sound Off on this Monday afternoon. Kevin Will and our special guest in studio is former Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham. Jordan, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon. And before we get into the issues regarding the props and maybe a couple of other things, is so with 22, you retired from politics. So what are you doing now?
I'm practicing law with my wife at Cunningham Law Group, and I started a public affairs consulting business with my former chief of staff called CM Public Affairs.
And you're located on Spring Street here in Paso Robles.
That's right.
Okay.
And I'm coaching a lot of youth sports, which is really fun.
How are your teams doing?
Pretty good. I got a good little soccer team this year.
All right. Yeah. All right. Good for you. It's that's quite a commitment. That's quite a commitment, but also can be frustrating, but mostly fun.
Mostly fun.
Yeah, it is. All right. So one of the things that I want to ask first before we go over a couple of the propositions, you presented bills when you were in the assembly. What, you know, in layman's terms, what is that process like? And is it similar to propositions how a proposition is proposed and put on the ballot?
So it's similar, but there's a different vehicle for it. So if you want to put your normal bill, so you run a bill on human trafficking or something, it's going to be a 41 majority vote bill, 41 out of the 80. You run it through a policy committee. You get it out of the policy committee. They suck almost everything now into appropriations, so you got to get through appropriations. Then it goes to the floor. You got to get the 41 votes on the floor. Then it goes to the other house. You run through the same process, eventually to the governor. So that's the normal bill. Now, if they want to put an initiative on the ballot, it's called a constitutional amendment, or an ACA, an assembly constitutional amendment. Anything that would entail a tax increase or modify Prop 13 in any way has to get two-thirds of the vote in each house. And then they can put non-tax increase initiatives on the ballot with majority votes, but they use an assembly constitutional amendment. The legislature's put all sorts of crazy things on the ballot. This year, they do it every year. Usually there's three or four, sometimes more, initiatives that get put on our ballot directly by the legislature. Nobody has to raise money. Nobody collects signatures. That's how they did the affirmative action one. The last, you probably remember that from 2 years ago, 4 years ago. A lot of us predicted that the affirmative action, which my colleagues all thought in the majority, they all thought this was great and it was going to pass, and it went down in flames because sometimes they're a little out of touch with how California voters actually feel about issues.
Well, that would
sometimes
be, that would be an interesting discussion on how some people, refer to they're out of touch, because when you look at the populations of California and, basically centered in maybe three areas and the rest of the place where there's a lot of disagreement on what's, what they think is right. But so I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there was some kind of maybe a proposal or legislation, I don't know how many years ago, on to simplify particularly propositions so it's not such legal terms and confusing to the voters to understand, or, like we brought up this morning, sometimes the no means yes, yes means no, because of the way it's worded. Was there any, do you recall any kind of law that said we got to simplify this for the voters?
Yeah, they're cosmetic, though, because at the end of the day, the attorney general still gets to write the actual name of the proposition or the initiative. And attorney generals, going back as far as I can remember, load the dice with it. I mean, they write it in a way that they're trying to either get it passed or get it stopped, depending on how they... I've never seen one attorney general in California that actually fairly labeled an initiative.
So
it's always political.
They're biased based on who they're appointed from by.
Yeah, or who they're elected by, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
I remember my first committee hearing in 2016, right after I got up there, was Javier Becerra being confirmed as appointed attorney general. And that was my one question to him. Can you commit to California voters to be fair in how you label initiatives? And he said, absolutely. And we know that he did not fairly label a single initiative his entire time.
Well,
just as an example.
I don't know why I'm laughing, because that stuff just, it hurts us. All right, so let's get right into this. It's we'll go into Prop 5. And what it says is allow bonds for affordable housing and public infrastructure with the 55% voter approval. You may have heard, maybe the ads or know that Andreas Seastrand and the...
great ad. I like that ad.
Yeah, Central Coast California's Taxpayers Association is vehemently against this. Can you can you explain why this is what some people consider dangerous?
Well, it fundamentally waters down Prop 13 protections, right? So a long time ago, when Prop 13 was enacted, it said any... bond needed a two-thirds vote, right? They carved out an exception for school bonds and lowered that threshold to 55%. The voters did that a couple decades ago. This would that now extend that, lower the threshold from two-thirds to 55% for so-called housing-related bonds, right? But it's just another breach in the wall of Prop 13, because if they get it for housing bonds... By the way, we're never going to cure our housing imbalance with public sector bond money. I mean, there's trillions of dollars needed from the private sector to build enough housing in California to lower our costs eventually. It's a drop in the bucket, but the reason the Taxpayers Association is opposing it and Howard Jarvis is opposing it is that if you start lowering that two-thirds threshold for housing, they've already done it for school bonds. If you start lowering it for housing, then it's going to be something else next. It's going to be something else next, and pretty soon... we've lost a core protection for taxpayers by chipping away at it by lowering the threshold from two-thirds to 55%. It's a lot harder to get two-thirds vote to put something on a ballot or to get a bond passed. A lot harder than 55.
Well, one of the things, and again, maybe you can help with the thinking up there that, okay, we get pounded with the housing crisis. We need to make more affordable housing. But if you lower this threshold and then your property taxes start to go up, that makes it more difficult for people to be able to afford housing, not only to buy, but also for renters as well. So what is can you understand the thinking of why they would even think this is beneficial?
Well, a lot of the advocates for this stuff are what I would call economically illiterate people. They don't understand supply and demand. They don't really understand markets. They, you know, it's like, hey, let's throw some public dollars at a problem and, you know, we'll see where it goes. I mean, these are some of the same folks that have spent $24 billion on homelessness in the last 6 years. And our homeless problem is still quite bad. You know, $24 billion is a lot. You know, it's not just spending the money. You got to spend it intelligently. You got to have things that work. And with the housing thing, I mean, this money is going to get, like I said, it's a drop in the bucket. It's going to get doled out if these bonds pass over a decade. And we're not going to cure it by having some public housing bonds. That just is not going to do it. The scale of that problem is going to require a lot more private sector investment.
When you were serving in the assembly, because you're talking about the homelessness and the amount of in the billions of dollars, and there was recently somewhat of a veiled threat from the governor that, hey, you counties and cities, you better let us know how you're spending this. And so far, from a recent study that came out, said there hasn't been accountability for the billions of dollars that was supposed to go to, quote unquote, solve this or end this problem.
That's right. I think that's a fair critique. There really hasn't been. I mean, they were shoveling money out the door, some of it to nonprofits, some directly to cities and counties, some through counties to nonprofits, but nobody was really counting where the nickels and dimes are going. I mean, they've only just started now to have any kind of real accountability. I will say our county, SLO County, has been more transparent than most on where those dollars have gone. I'll give them credit for that.
But they've changed the priorities from roads to homelessness first. That they put that when the three got power, they put that at number one and dropped roads to six.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Well, we won't. We'll have to maybe wait a couple of years to see how that gets changed a little bit. All right, I know that you've been and when you were in the assembly, you had many bills, and one of yours was one of your many issues though was safety, public safety, and you're really concerned about Prop 36.
Well, Prop 36, we need it. And the reason we need it is we've tried with the issue, it's tied into homelessness, it's tied into addiction, it's tied into property crimes. All of those numbers have been going the wrong way in California for a long time. And which was very foreseeable because for 10 or 15 years, it was all carrot and no stick. I mean, all this, I think drug addicts should get the opportunity to try to get treatment and clean up. I'll just say that out. But if you've ever worked with that population, which I have in my criminal law practice and as a prosecutor before that, a lot of those addicts don't want to get clean up front. They have to go into jail and clean up and dry out for a little while before they even are open to getting treatment. Because after all, they're addicts, and what they want is to get high, and find their next fix. And so we have eliminated, and on property crimes, you know, you see rampant organized property crimes, smash and grabs, all that stuff. There's no penalty for that effectively in our laws today. There's no stick to induce people that need treatment to get cleaned up. We've removed all that. It goes all the way back to Prop 47 under Governor Brown. And Prop 36, I think, which is why you see the law enforcement groups, the DAs, those are the prime movers behind Prop 36. We are undoing, if it passes, we will be able to undo some of the damage that has been done. And we will give law enforcement and the court system real tools to actually start making a dent in the social problem we have.
Well, we're going to go to break, but real quick, it's funny because 247, I know Dan Dow and Ian Parkinson, they were saying this is misleading. We can't vote this in, and look what happened. So, all right, we'll be back. We're with Jordan Cunningham this afternoon. You're listening to Sound Off on KPRL.
I'm Tom Rigotti. With just over 2 weeks to go before Election Day, Donald Trump campaigns in hurricane-ravaged western North Carolina. Fox's Bill Malugin reports.
He visited with state and local officials while he was out there. He surveyed some of the damage, and he expressed amazement at the early voting numbers out here in North Carolina. Despite all that storm damage, according to the Associated Press, about 1 million ballots have already been cast.
Kamala Harris is stumping with former Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Fighting intensifies in the Middle East with Israel and Hezbollah exchanging fire.
Israel launched a series of airstrikes against Hezbollah-linked banks across Lebanon. Smoke could be seen rising from the capital of Beirut, specifically in the Dahya neighborhood, a Hezbollah stronghold.
That's Fox's Trey Yingst reporting from Haifa, Israel. America's listening to Fox News.
The customer service and workmanship at Davis Body Shop is first rate.
Jessica, who is a North County resident, talks about her experience at Davis Body Shop.
Lori, Eric, and Patrick were super helpful. Patrick did a great job ensuring that everything my car needed was done in an incredibly fast time. My car looks amazing inside and out. For body work and customer care, Davis is the best, and we would never take our cars anywhere else.
Davis Body Shop has repaired well over 80,000 vehicles since 1962, and today Davis is the longest established shop on the Central Coast. If you ever need the services of Davis Body Shop, remember, they are San Luis Obispo County's most honored, respected, and trusted auto collision specialist with two locations, on El Camino Real with a convenient enterprise car rental facility, and Davis Body Shop on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
Hey there, glad you can make it. Come on in.
Wow, your kitchen looks amazing. So does your whole house.
Thanks. We just had our cabinets refinished by Peek Painting. They did such a fantastic job, we had them come back and paint our whole living area.
I guess you could say they have your stamp of approval.
Yes, sir. Just like everyone else on Google and Yelp. Booking a quote is easy. Just go to peakpainting.com. That's P-E-E-K painting.com. And book a time and day that fits your schedule. No back and forth phone tag. Just click and book.
Sounds too easy.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peek Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Kevin Will along with Jordan Cunningham in the studio today. Jordan, let's go right to it as we're winding down here. Got about 7 or 8 minutes. Prop 34, and for someone, as we were talking during the break, you have served, you're an attorney. Details, this one is extremely confusing.
It's impossible to understand. But here's what's going on with Prop 34. There is a guy who runs the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. He takes dollars that run through the AIDS Healthcare Foundation that are supposed to go to healthcare, and he uses those dollars to fund pro-rent control initiatives. That's why you see a pro-rent control or some sort of local rent control initiative on the ballot like every 2 years now. And so Prop 34, the California Apartment Association, is trying to kneecap this guy and cut off the funding source he uses to be running these rent control initiatives all the time. So the conservative vote, actually, in my view, on Prop 34 is to vote yes, because then this guy can't siphon off all these dollars that are supposed to go to healthcare for people with AIDS and use them to support pro-rent control measures. And I think rent control is has never worked ever anywhere in history that it's been tried. It's sort of like communism.
So 34 kind of rolls or pigtails with 33, Prop 33, you're saying? Because that is the rent control on residential property initiative.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that's why this 34 would be confusing to...
and they label it something to do with prescription drug revenue. It really has nothing to do with that. It says that this guy can't take healthcare dollars and use them to fund other ballot initiatives.
All right, then let's go to Prop 32, raising the minimum wage initiative.
Minimum wage, I was in McDonald's the other day with my 10-year-old. I hate to admit it, but, you know, he likes the Happy Meals or whatever. I try to find something that isn't going to shoot my blood pressure through the roof there. But they've got no humans left in these restaurants. I mean, it's all kiosks, and that's all a consequence of minimum wage. I mean, you keep pushing it up and up and up, and it takes away starter jobs for a lot of people, a lot of high schoolers, a lot of, you know, college students that work part-time. Those tend to be the people that work minimum wage, low-skill labor jobs, and I think minimum wage ends up hurting those people. So I will be voting no, personally, on minimum wage.
All right.
We've already increased it a lot, by the way.
Yeah,
California has one of the highest minimum wages, and so I'm not sure why we really need this again.
And we've seen a lot of businesses shut down because of that, or they've less staff working.
Oh, if you run a restaurant today in California and you can't automate a lot of what you're doing, I don't know how you make a buck.
Yeah, it's and then the prices. Now, this one, I don't know if this is somewhat laughable, but it's on the ballot. It's 6. And that eliminates the constitutional provision allowing involuntary servitude for incarcerated persons.
What a joke. Look, we've got work programs in our prisons today. That's generally speaking a pretty good thing, because prisoners that are bored really aren't the best prison population. It tends to be problematic. If we paid them minimum wage while they were incarcerated in prison, it would blow up the entire state budget. So this is a goofy initiative that's funded out as it came out of part of the reparations panel that California was doing, and they view it as a racial justice issue. I think that's incorrect. I think you want people in prison being able to do some manual labor to keep them occupied, and hopefully for some of them maybe learn some skills that they can apply on the outside. Mm-hmm. And this would essentially eliminate work programs in prisons.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got about a minute and 20 seconds left here, and there's a couple of bonds here in the county that have to do with schools, and you have some thoughts on school bonds in general.
So one thing to recognize is California is one of the few states that doesn't have school construction or modernization in its state budget. So if school districts want to add buildings or retrofit buildings or do anything related to infrastructure, school sites, the only way they can do that is through bonding. That said, this is $10 billion, 8.5 to K-12, 1.5 to community college. The debt servicing for the next 30 years would be $85 million a year just in interest. And, you know, are they going to spend it wisely? That's always the question with these school bonds. Do you think the money's going to go to the classroom, so to speak, or to building classrooms in this case? And do we need them? You know, those are all fair questions.
Well, the other thing, too, is that people need to look on their property tax bills and see how much money they're spending already for bonds that will continue in addition to the new ones coming on.
Yeah, I mean, we bond like crazy in the state. And, you know, you got to the state budget goes to, you know, the tax dollars get used to service the debt on bonds that have been passed by the voters. We haven't passed a school construction bond since 2016. So and that one's all used up. So I'm trying to be as fair as I can there are some arguments, I think, for this school bond, but it is a hefty price tag. It's going to cost people a lot of money to service the debt, and anybody's guess as to whether it gets used efficiently.
All right, Jordan, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. Appreciate you taking the time and offering us your experience on that. Again, thanks.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
All right. All right, Susanna's coming up next. Jackson Reese talking about a very, very interesting subject, California unions. Thank you for joining us here on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.